he said, I found them lacking. His mother whispered something to him, and he returned to them. He said, you asked about my father. He has departed from the world, and whenever holy, pious men embark upon a journey, he drives the mules behind them. If you are exalted, saintly men, how is it that you have not discovered him amongst the mules driving behind you? I have summed you up at the very beginning, and now I know that I was right. For my father has only to see the mule of a holy and pious man, and he straightway drives along behind in order to bear the yoke of the fellow. Now since you are not worthy enough of my father to be your mule driver, I shall not tell you who he is. Rabbi Judah said to Rabbi Isaac, this child does not seem to me to be human. They hate. And the child spoke the words of Torah and gave new interpretations of the Torah. They said, come, let us bless. That is Havlan in the Baruch. The child said, you have well spoken, because the holy name is not blessed through this benediction unless one first expresses one intention to say it. He began by quoting, I shall bless the Lord at all times. What need was there for David to say, I shall bless the Lord? David saw that it was necessary to express his intention. And he said, I shall bless, or when a man is seated at a table, the Shekhinah is present, and the other side, that is the evil forces, is also present. As soon as he expresses intention to bless the Holy One, blessed be he, the Shekhinah is able to prepare itself to face the realm above in order to receive a blessing, and the other side is humiliated. And if a man does not express his intention to bless the Holy One, blessed be he, the other side rejoices and shakes with mirth, for it gains a share in that blessing. We might ask why, in that case, we do not have to express an intention with the other blessing. The answer is because there, the object of the benediction itself represents the intention. Let us learn how this applies. If one says a blessing over a piece of fruit, the fruit itself represents the intention, and one says the blessing over it, and the other side has no share in it. Before this, when the fruit is still in the power of the other side, one does not say a blessing over it, for it is written, it shall not be eaten, to prevent us from saying the blessing over the fruit, and to prevent the other side from being blessed. But when it emerges from its power, it may be eaten, and a blessing is pronounced over it, and it represents itself an expression of the intention to say a blessing. Similarly, with all good things of the world of which blessings are said, they all represent the intention to bless, and the other side has no share in this blessing. You might say, in that case, the cup of wine in the grace after meals also represents this intention. Why say explicitly, come, let us bless? This is because the cup of wine has already fulfilled that function when it was drunk during the meal, and when the blessing, he who creates the fruit of the vine, or pi agapen, was said over it. When we come to the grace after meals, we need an additional expression of intention, for the cup is now needed for the Holy One, blessed be he, and not for food. Therefore, we have to express our intention verbally. You might say, let us bless him of whose bounty we have eaten. The Baruch Shechem Yishalom is the expression of the intention, and blessed be he of whose bounty we have eaten is the actual benediction. That is correct. But let us bless is a second expression of intention. The first expression, that is, the Baruch Shechem Yishalom, is for the cup of blessing on its own. But when this cup is raised, in other words, the cup in the Kabbalistic symbol system represents Malchut, and with it one blesses the Sphira of Bina, which is the upper world, the source of emanation. When this cup is raised, it is associated with the second expression in the phrase, let us bless, in relation to the upper world, whence come every fruit and every benediction. That is why it is expressed in the third person. Normally we make a bracha on the second person, Baruch Atasha, but here it's in the third person. For the upper world is hidden, and there the intention to pronounce a benediction can only be expressed on this level with a cup of benediction. In other words, the phrase Havlan and Mevarech, according to the Rabosai Mevel invention, according to the Zohar, is to allow the blessing to rise up from the sphere of Malchut into the sphere of Binah, which is above it. Rabbi Judah said, how fortunate we are, for we have never in our whole lifetime heard words such as these until this moment. As I said, this child is not human. And then before we continue. So it's an obviously marvelous piece of literature, but it is now elevated a simple statement of a problem in the Gemara, a story in the Gemara in which somebody said, bring some wine so that we can mention. And the question became whether or not they are allowed to eat or drink after expressing an intention to bench, into part of the benching itself, which plays the role of raising the sphira of Malchut, which is this world of emanation, into the higher spheres, the very source of emanation. And therefore, the Rabosai Mirbel invention, according to the Zohar, has this deep Kabbalistic significance, and therefore it's part of the ritual. Okay, yes?
What was Professor Tishbe's source for that? That's where did this come from?
I was just quoting the Zohar. His translation of the Zohar. There's a direct quote of the Zohar, except in Professor Tishbe's translation, which is much better than the standard Sansino translation in many details. Perhaps you want me to read the Sansino translation?
No.
Were these stories influenced by living in non-Jewish and Christian environments where people were seeing miracles all over
No doubt. And the notion of the wondrous child, you see, that also has some...
There was a
robe or somebody...
Well, it's a combination. It's a combination of the mystery of the small child shall lead them on the one hand, together with the fact that in the Talmud we find stories of scholars encountering in a school and examples of what is it called, bibliomancy, where they ask the child to read whatever passage of the Bible he's studying at the moment, and that's used to be a sign for predicting the future or what have you. I mean, that's common to all cultures, but we find it in the Talmud. So this construct, and you have to admit that in contrast to the quotations I was reading the last couple of weeks, is a beautiful passage. The whole thing hangs together as an interesting piece of literature. But now comes the question, was this purely a Zoroastic invention? In other words, was the idea that the phrase, Rabosai Mivel invention, has now become part of the ritual, an invention of the Zohar, or had it actually devolved into a ritual in some small or other Jewish communities earlier, and then was elevated by the Zohar into something of cosmic significance? And this is Professor Katz's point, namely, yes?
The end of the Gemara and then the Zohar to go over. Was it Gemara on the
story? This is nothing to do with the Gemara. The Yanuka is a main character in the Zohar, one of their stellar characters, and this is a typical description. Okay? The child.
Not this particular child,
but the concept of finding a child to read the passage and so on. Mm-hmm.
Like picking the next Dalai Lama.
It's also like Christ in
here. You read the history of the father and so forth. They always start off with 5 years old.
Some of the Chachamim are brilliant children, and others, like Rabbi Akiva, acquires.
Both of us doing symphonies.
Assembly, and then they come up with some brilliant statements.
Okay, so Professor Katz.
Nice story.
Right, nice story.
Okay. Every grandfather has a couple of
stories. Every act
of it. It isn't all Christian. I was thinking of the same as yours.
Okay, now the leadership
system
is
going.
13th century. Well, in Spain,
right.
And when did the Rambam emerge?
Century earlier, before the Zohar. Oh, yes, sure. He would not have tolerated anything like this.
Even if it was written up in Newsweek?
Mm-hmm. If you take a look at my page 182, this is a quotation from the Rush. About a third of the way down from the paragraph there. Umi hai taima, for this reason, nishtane brachat hamazon, third down from the top of that second paragraph. For this reason, brachat hamazon differs mikol dvarim ha'acherim hatu'unim kos. This is the reason why brachat hamazon differs from all other mitzvot which require a kos shel bracha. For example, if you make kiddush, we say bari pri hagafen first, right? First we make a bari pri hagafen and then the rest of kiddush. Or in havdalah we make bari pri hagafen and then the rest of havdalah. Kedom kiddush v'havdalah brachat chasanim u'brachat milah shekulam bari pri hagafen kod matan. In all of those cases, you make the bracha of bari pri hagafen before the main bracha, but kan mevarech bari pri hagafen b'achrona. Ve'ein lomar mishum de'i eshal levarech bari pri hagafen tchila. You can't say bari pri hagafen tchila she'arei im haya rotzeh l'shtot haya shoteh b'lo pri hagafen, because after all, if it was still the middle of the meal, he could have drunk the wine without the bracha bari pri hagafen. De'i yitachen she'yavarech bari pri hagafen. D'ha leta. D'ha miki amar havlon v'nivrich asur l'shtot b'lo pri hagafen. So notice, this is with Professor Katz's point. The Rush is proving to you that Brachat HaMazon is different, because after all, you might think, says the Rush, that you can't make Brachat HaMazon first, because while you're in the middle of the meal, you can still drink as much wine as you want without a bracha. And he says, no, that's not possible, because from the moment that the person says, Havlan v'nivarech, he's not allowed to drink without a bracha. Implying that at least within the community of the Rush, one had already said Havlan Unvarech without any Kabbalistic influences. So Professor Katz's point is that although perhaps the majority of the Jewish communities did not, as enunciated in the Rambam, did not have this Rabosai Nevar invention, it's a mistake to believe that the innovation of saying Havlan Unvarech was a distortion that the Zohar introduced into a Talmudic statement, because somehow rather just by the normal process of evolution and transmission and education and so on and so forth, the original meaning of the phrase Havlan u'nevarech, which originally meant let's drink some wine and make Birchat HaMazon, got transformed into the statement let us make Birchat HaMazon, which of course in Yiddish is Rabosai Nivel Invention. We don't mention the cup of wine at all when we say Rabosai Nivel Invention. So Havlan u'nevarech, the Havlan, which originally meant drink some wine, now had been transformed into meaning let us say Birchat HaMazon.
And the Rosh left before the Zohar?
At the same time.
So it was there as an antecedent, but the Zohar marketed the Zohar.
That's right. It was an antecedent which was marketed by the Zohar. That's a good way of putting it. And and Professor Katz's point is that there are a lot of halachot of this nature, and let's go through several others, which are each one of which is interesting. Okay? Let's go on to the next topic, which is... the issue of the kohanim washing their hands. The custom is that before it is brachat kohanim and shul, the kohanim wash their hands. Let's take a look at the Rambam. So on my page 187. Rambam says that there are various things that can prevent a kohen from going up to the shulchan, one of which is that his hands are impure. Right? Halacha hei, tumat yadayim hayadayim ketzad. How do impure hands form an obstacle to the Kohen going up and giving the priestly blessing? Kohen shalom natal et yadav lo yisad kapa. Ela yidnotel et yadav ad haperk, kederach shemakadshim lavoda, yachar kach mavarech, shenema asur yudechem kodesh v'ochad desham. V'achalal eno natzet kapav shalom she'enu lufkimata. And now if we take a look at the Kesef Mishnah, for example, Ketzad, Kohen Shalom Natal Yadav, Memor de Yeshua ben Levi Perak Elu Ne'emarim, Perak Shrashi Shalom Natal Yadav Lefnei Alotolu Dukhan, Kolomar, Li'achol Pi Shanatal Shacharit. V'chein Hiskimu HaTosfot. Rashi and Tosfot interpret this to mean that he washed his hands just prior to going up to give the blessing. V'ein Nirakein Yidivrei Rabbeinu. This is not the impression that one gets from the way the Rambam reads this halacha. Shekatav tum'at hayadayim ve'i kishenatal yadot shacharit asik tarat hayadayim mibayele ve'i natal ve'i kishenatal yadot shacharit asik. If he's dealing with a case of where someone had if he's talking about a case where a person had washed his hands in the morning, tarat yadayim mibayele. He shouldn't have used the phrase tumat yadayim, but tarat yadayim, because it needed an extra wash, an extra tahara. Sharei einam tmeyot, ela shetzarich lehosif tahara al taratam. Va'ol im ita havrelei lichtov af al pi she'en yadav mulachlachot. ואינו יודע להם שום תומה, לא יישא את שיטו, כמו שכתב בפרק י' מהלכות ברכות, גבי נטילת ידיים לאכילה. וכן כתב באורח חיים, וזה לשונו, כתב הרב הלבון בן הרמב"ם, הלכה למעשה לפני אבא מורי ז"ל, וזולתו מגדולי השלום ומדעי התורה, שכל כהן העומד בתפילה ייגש לברכת כהנים וסומך על נטילת ידיים לפי ישמע ולתפילה עד כמה שנים. So according to the Rambam, there is no special requirement to wash the hands before the blessing of the kohen. Okay?
The Natilas Yadayim in the morning
would be sufficient. The Natilas Yadayim in the morning would be sufficient. If we take a look at the next my next page in the Kesef Mishnah, V'yitol Yadav V'yivarech al Natilat Yadayim. My next page. How's impure hands prevent the fat kohenim? Kohen shelo natal yadav lo yisa et kapav. Ela noten yadav al haperek kederach shemekadshim la'avodav yachakach mevarech. Umashma mibarav, v'kishi yadav tmeyot, kigon shelo natal shacharit ka'ama. V'tzarech litov. Ha'im natal yadav shacharit, the person washed his hands in the morning before davening, ve'eino yodea lehem shum tumah, and they haven't come in contact with something impure, אין צריך לחזור לנוטלם. אם לאו כן, חבי ללומה, ואף על פי שאין אדם לוכחות, ואינו יודע להם תומו, לא יישא כפיו עד שיעתו. כמו שכתב בפרק ז' מלכות ברכות גם נטילת ידיים בתפילה. ועוד מדי הזכיר גם בנשיאת כפיים תומעת הידיים, עלמא דכל שנטל ידיו שחרית ואינו יודע להם תומו, אינו צריך לחזור וליטול. ותדע דבר לעבודה נמי, אין הכהן צריך לקדש לכל עבודה, אלא פעם אחת, מקדש בבוקר והולך ועובד כל היום. In the temple itself, once the Kohen washed his hands, performed ablution in the morning, he didn't have to go ahead and repeat it before each and every act. וכל הלילה, כמו שכתב מוזל פרק ה' מלכות ביד המקדש, וכן נוהגים בארץ ישראל, שלא ייטול הכהן ידיו בשעת נשיאת כפיים. And that's the custom in Egypt, that the Kohen does not wash his hands before Nesiyat Yadayim, Ela somech ala natila shenatal yadav shacharit. Aval Rashi, peyosh kol ha-Kohen shelo natal yadav lefnei alotel l'duchan lo yisad kapav, umashma midvarav, sh'af al pi shenatal yadav shacharit, yada lehem tarot, tzorich lachzol benitlom samuch la liyato l'duchan. Ba'tosfot katru b'sham, sh'Rashi katav, אמר לו, יאללה, אם נתן ידיו שרפית עמדה, אין צריך ליטול ידיו כשאלה לדוכן, כי דומה שרותק מהגלת תלמיד, שראין לשנו משמע, כאן שכן שלא ניתן ידיו בפני על אותו לדוכן, משמע ממש סמוך, או דמייתי למית, etc. etc. Okay. So at any event, the base Yosef as normal simply brings a difference of opinion that according to Rashi, there is a requirement for washing of the hands of the Kohen just prior to the Gittin. Whereas he says the Rambam doesn't require this, and the custom in Egypt was to follow the Rambam and not require a special washing of the hands. Let's take a look at the Bach, the Girl Circus, in the next page. V'chei mitzvato, yachalotz min alav v'yitod yodav v'yivareich al netilat yodayim, mashma, da'af al pir natal yodav shacharit, even though he washed his hands in the morning, Sirik Lachzor will he told Yadav Lutnei Ali told the Fandi Alfina Mikrosu Ulidech and Kodesh Belfuat Hashem. Kid Yahishua Ben Levi Perk Be'ilunarim, the Mashmale, the Bibikat Kwani Mishdoq, the Heed the Nasiat Yadayim. The Kamar Kra, Nami the Sirik Li told Yadav, the Kra Tarti Mashmal, the Chain Mashmal Mikhail Shrashi, the Shamu Mikhail Bet Yosef, the Loka Mashmal Mikhail Haramam, the Ain Sirik Li told Elokish Yadav. So this is just purely a machloket between the Ashkenazic and the Sephardi authorities as to whether there's a particular requirement for netilat yadayim prior to the Gittin. Okay. So at the end of that tour, he says v'chein matzinu b'maharil. ומצאתי במחזור ישן כתוב על שם מהרים עולים ובמקום שאין לדיים רק כהנים אז אם יש בחור ייתן מים לכהנים לתילה לעלות לדוכן על כאן לשם. So the Maharil quotes an ancient Ashkenazic custom that, of course, the way the custom evolved was that once it was decided that a special washing of the hands has to take place, it became natural to say that the people that should wash the Kohanim's hands should be the Levim, and if there are no Levim around, then it falls on the Bechor. So this was an ancient Ashkenazi custom. It was not a custom in the Sephardic communities. The fact that eventually the Beit Yosef attributes the Zohar, the specific custom according to which the Levim are to wash the hands of the Kohanim in the morning, is in fact nothing other than an old Ashkenazic custom that it evolved for its own reasons, independent of any Kabbalistic interpretations, and was adopted by the Zohar. And this is also brought in my page 190 in the Mordechai, who also discusses the issue of Anotein Mayim L'Kohanim L'Tol Yudeihem. מצאתי שם עם אותו הנותן מים לכהנים ולתל ידיהם בא עץ על שליח ציבור מזכירו ולתל ידיו צריך לישא כפיו אף So apparently within the Ashkenazi communities it was the case, as we practice today, that one washes, when the Levim wash the hands of the Kohanim. This was not the practice in the Sephardic communities, but the effect of the Zohar was to take a custom which was specifically Ashkenazic. For the Sephardic surroundings, this was a bit of an innovation, and to use your phrase, to market. So that was the second of the topics, and I think we will stop here. The next topic is the morning Netilat Yadayim, and then issues of... yes, go ahead. The
Sephardic custom is universal.
Now, after the conquest of the Zohar. Yes. So this particular Ashkenazic custom has taken over, even though originally in Egypt that was not the case. And we'll continue with. I would hope that we can read the first of Professor Katz's articles in another 2 shiur. Take it slow.
I haven't gotten far enough in here.